If you've been enjoying this podcast and want a super easy way to support it, you can simply find me on YouTube by searching Demon Creep. A subscription is a great help. But if you want to help the longevity of this podcast, my channel offers channel memberships for as low as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep enjoying the Demon Creep podcast.
You're listening to Ryazine's Late Night Creepypasta Podcast. I'm sharing audio versions directly from my YouTube channel, Ryazine, and all of the creepypastas can be found there as well, so check me out and subscribe if that's your thing. And keep enjoying listening to Late Night Radio. I Am a Good Man. Consolidate. By Holy Otherness. I love the bus. A car of cars made long and strong, with many wheels and powerful diesel engine. It is one where some would make many. Foolish some. I drive the bus, bringing the children from many places to one. Lovely singularity. Painfully incomplete, however. There are many children sat across many seats. They are rancid in their multitude. Many voices babble where one would suffice, as they all say the same thing over and over again, without knowing it. Homogenize me, homogenize me. Homogenize me. Make me whole. I hear you. At home, I consolidate. I knocked out the walls for to make it all one. No need for tedious hallways or doors to ruin the flow of one. Most use of trash cans, garbage disposals, and toilets to remove their waste, but not I. Waste is waste. And the dumpster next to my bed serves me well. My bed is all the cushion I need. Bed, couch, and chair. All in one in front of my TV. For other miscellaneous services, the pit serves me well. If only others saw how lovely life can be when streamlined to its utmost potential. If only future and present were one, then they'd all see that my way is the way. Consolidation. Now is now, and unfortunately, past and future are not one, so I must contend with this splitting of moments and wait for the future and contend with its gross separation. I will show them, though, what the beauty of homogeneity is. With blackened windows on my great bus, I will take the children somewhere far away and make them one voice, as they always should have been. I take them far away. Forgive me for the separation. Some evils are necessary. They scream and cry, for they don't know what they want yet. Not but the 12 gauge in my lap keeps them away as I take them to the paradise they know not of yet. I park the bus behind a barn some many hours, dozen hours away from home, and the tubes strung about on the bus begin to sprinkle sleep on the many who will be one. My gas mask works well. I knew it would. I tested it beforehand. I take their sleeping bodies and begin to string them together with sewing needle and welding torch. Flesh can be quite pliable when heated correctly. I know, for I made my fingers one on my left hand for practice and pleasure. There is one whose voice rings sweeter than the rest by far, and she shall be the head. The voice of one made out of many. The rest are sown or burnt shut, their voices wasted in their multitude. I drive back now with my new human. I am jealous of it. I comfort myself with knowledge of my own, if lesser, oneness. Soon it will be home, and they will see what their children were meant to be. All is one. Clouds by Meeman. Looking at clouds from the ground is a rather absorbing experience. The educated human mind sees the majestic plumes of white as mere wisps of crystallized water vapor and dust particles in the higher atmosphere. But deep inside, there remains an early spark of curiosity and wonder, such as displayed by advanced apes and very small children. This spark does not see wisps of vapor in complex crystalline formations, but birds and beasts in faces, carriages and palaces, entire mountains and fortresses on the move across the azure, blue sky. From above, this feeling only grows. As one rides in a rickety metal tube 10,000 meters above the ground, soaring into the sky, the educated human mind gives way to the childlike blossom of wonder. Below you, a sea of clouds wave and ripple to the shores of a distant land, and vague shapes of arcane gods drift past the triple-paned glass, where you are safe and pressurized and sound, and all the while, undefined, smoky, nimboid beings watch from afar, their anvil-shaped tops spiraling yet higher into space. This was what I told my seatmate on the 2 o'clock flight to Sydney, as I roll up the windows and marveled at the view. The flight had so far been uneventful, with the only amusement being Greg's unfortunate incident at check-in. So any distraction from the plain, sterile interior of the plane was very welcome to me. Greg, however, did not share my enthusiasm and appreciation of such natural wonders, and merely grunted in reply before taking a long sip of God knows what he managed to smuggle onto the plane. Soon, even the clouds failed to entertain me, and I slid the shutter down just as the plane made a left swerve over the Pacific, catching the glaring sunlight between panes of glass. From then on, I resorted to browsing the in-flight magazine, fiddling with the remote, and staring at my hands to pass the time. Time drew on. Nothing of note happened, and I fell asleep nodding on the tray table. It was Greg who woke me up when the trouble started. Hey, man, he whispered, lightly slapping me awake. Up. Captain said something about bad turbulence, so tray table, remote, window shades, all of them up, and wipe your mouth. I sat up blearily, swiping a hand across my chin. How long's it been? West Coast time reads 7:23, so that make it about 4 hours. I think we crossed the dateline or something. It's still bright out there. I returned my seat to the upright position and took a peek out the window. Sure enough, orange half-lights streamed in through the crack. I don't think that's how the dateline works, Greg. Still, the long daylight hours were odd. I made a mental note to look it up once we reached solid land and an internet connection. Greg obviously was not lying, for as I stowed the table and remote, the plane began to shake. I drew up the window shades to a grandly terrifying sight. The majestic white sea was now black and choppy, swirling and churning in silent twists and twirls. The sun still shone, but it was blazing through a gap in the top of a sparking dark cloud, too close to the wingtip for comfort. The wind must have been extraordinary, because the cloud did not drift aimlessly, but kept close pace with the wingtip. For a moment my imagination took over, and the sun shone like a red ominous eye, blazing amidst black's tentacles of vapor and lightning, reaching out towards the plane like a predator out of the abyss. Through the PA, the captain reminded us to keep calm and strapped down. Overhead and underfoot, aluminum plating and stray luggage hummed and shook. The on-screen flight information showed discouraging numbers. Altitude, 13,000 meters. Airspeed, 900 kilometers per hour. Headwind, 110 kilometers per hour. Hold on a moment. If the cloud was following the plane, then how in God's blue sky was it drifting against a hurricane-force wind? This thought coincided with an equally dreadful noise, like pebbles in a hubcap, but coarser and louder, enveloping the entire titanium frame of the plane, until even the blast of the engines was drowned out in this surreal static. The cloud now had swelled to a frightfully enormous size, with an angry electric whips flashing all around the aircraft. The sun was barely visible, merely a spot of red haze amidst swirling, sparkling black. The plane was suddenly lifted up, 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 and the PA system exploded in a screeching whine. Greg was pressed against the front seat, hands cupping his head, while I clung to the armrest, hunched almost double. Several someones screamed. There was a cry of thunder, and the entire plane was flung like a mere toy, reeling from an unseen impact. Then another scream, this time from the seat in front of me. I turned to look at the thin, manicured finger madly pressed against the window, following the contour of flesh towards the three-layered pane of glass. Vacuum-sealed gray diamond A proclaimed the dealer's mark, dragging my gaze out to the unknown air beyond. There was something inside me that protested not to look, never to look, but it was too late, and my eyes were firmly planted on a thing outside the plane. At first I saw nothing. Then a little switch went on in my mind, and everything snapped into place. Something was plastered against the glass, milky and flaccid, the complexion of an engorged slug. Lining it was a good number of suckers, pressed hungrily against the window and pulsating to the tune of an alien heartbeat. Looking closer, the suckers were teethed, and terrifyingly so, for those were far too sharp, and far too many. Then the thing at the window shivered, and the numerous teeth clawed against the glass like hungry cats, and the screaming started up again. this time from my own throat. I scrambled away from the window, pressing my body as far in as possible, and slammed the window shutter down with a snap. Around me, panic and terror took hold as the plane groaned and compressed under the chattering static sound. Greg was crying. The next part remains hazy in my memory. I remember a mighty crack running along aisle 32 as pressured air whistled out and scores of pulsating, cloudy things hissed into the fuselage, innumerable little mouths clattering and snapping. I remember the passengers being picked out of seats like grapes, as a slippery thing coiled and chewed around them. The section I was in began to fall, tumbling out of the terrible, gnashing cloud, and I caught a glimpse of the body behind the thing. Half smoke, half flesh, grotesquely inflated with unknown wispy gas, and the eyes, large and horrible and human, peering through the dark mists, intently examining its prey. Then I fell further, through the cloudy sea and into a blue, shattered sky. I think I might have somehow undone my seatbelt, for all of a sudden I was falling alone, down towards the foaming ocean. The impact with the water left me unconscious, and the next thing I remember is sitting up in bed, back in a brace and leg in a splint. They told me it was a true miracle that I was found by a lone fishing vessel, delirious and babbling about living clouds and toothed tentacles. It was in the hospital that I started having nightmares, and occasionally wake up screaming from a terror in a dreamscaped sky. There were no other survivors, nor bodies recovered. Much of the wreckage was carried away by the current, but a sizable fragment washed up on a Fijian shore several weeks after the incident. The part which made me throw up in my newspaper was the picture, showing a line of small holes neatly punched along the metal. Tooth marks. I keep myself indoors if I can help it, and my roommate brings me groceries every week. She hasn't heard the full story of the attack in the skies and the thing in the clouds, and neither will anyone else, with the exception being several weary fishermen in the middle of the Pacific. This manuscript will remain sealed until my time of death, which I believe will be upon me soon and swiftly. Until then, I shall take my pills, say my prayers to whatever god that remains up there, and keep well away from the windows. There was a thunderstorm directly overhead since yesterday morning, and it hasn't cleared up yet. If you liked the story, please consider subscribing. Thank you. Visiting an abandoned church. If you ever feel the need to visit an abandoned church in the dead of night, my first advice would be not to. But you are a stubborn one, aren't you? So you were going to do it anyway. Fine. Let me give you some advice to survive the night. First of all, it's clear that if you are there, you are either a thrill seeker or trying to complete some mystical, creepy ritual, or both. Either case, the key word here is cautiousness. If at any point you feel shivers begin running up and down your body, or get goosebumps, or worse still, feel someone staring at you from the shadows. Get out. I'm serious. Whatever you are looking for there isn't worth your life. Another word of caution. Don't enter the confessional. Whatever is hiding in there is not a priest. And to be perfectly honest, it may not even be a human being. If you feel the urge to confess all of a sudden, reevaluate your life choices and wait till the daytime. Also, visit an official church and not one abandoned decades ago. If you do step into the confessionary and begin speaking to the voice behind the grilled wall, don't believe a word he says. He is a liar, a manipulator, and his intentions far from kind. Now, there might be wine waiting for you at the altar. Drinking it would be a monumentally bad idea. It will taste divine, yes, but at what cost? Don't forget to leave somewhere between midnight and dawn. Whatever is lurking there will be happy to keep you as their guest for far longer than you wish to stay, unless you follow this rule. The altar is the ideal place to kneel down and pray. But beware chatting with other penitents that might be asking the inevitably inverted cross for otherworldly favors. They might be human, yes, foolish enough to be there just like you. But they might be the same kind of creature that lurks inside the confessionary. Finally, before you leave, I might have lied to you in these instructions only once. It's up to you to figure out what advice you shouldn't follow. Your life could very well depend on it. Black-Eyed Kids. It was just a regular night. I'd like to say that I noticed some bad signs or that it was raining and thunder roared through the sky, but that would be a lie. It was a normal, uneventful night, and I was walking back from my best friend's apartment. To tell you the truth, it wasn't even that late. Perhaps around 10 p.m., I was listening to some music and minding my own business. After all, I always considered that neighborhood to be rather safe. When I first noticed them, I found it odd that three kids so young would be walking around without their parents at this time of night. They couldn't be older than 8 or 9. They were well dressed, so they clearly weren't homeless. There were two boys and a little girl, who was a bit younger and very petite, though they very clearly weren't intimidating. I suddenly felt a rush of dread fill over me. As the little girl began walking toward me, I pressed pause and the music stopped. Why was the city suddenly so silent? Even at this time of night, cars should be driving by and some people should be strolling down the block. But suddenly I realized there was no one around. No one but the kids and myself, that was.
"Good night, miss,"
the girl greeted me, and even if her voice was innocent and sweet, I immediately cringed and took a step back. Why was I scared of this cute, small girl? I couldn't put my finger on it, but I could still feel my heart beating so fast. I began worrying I would have a heart attack.
Hi?
I replied, hesitantly. Usually, I would have asked her where her parents were, or offer some assistance. But all I wanted to do was get the hell away from there. My apartment was only a block away and I seriously considered just running toward it.
Miss, we need to use a phone to call our parents. Could you let us into your house, please?
She was so polite. And yet something about the way she stared, the way they stared at me, almost without blinking, unnerved me. I was trembling. I hadn't even noticed it up until that point, but I certainly did then. I was afraid for my life, and I couldn't figure out why. Once again, the idea of running away from them just crossed my mind. But before I could even open my mouth to answer, one of the boys spoke.
There's no need for that. We just need to use your phone.
It was as if they had read my mind. I looked down at the kid in shock, and that's when I noticed it. How could have I missed it before? Their eyes were pitch black, without any color to them, without an iris, just black. I gasped and took a step back before rushing away from the three creatures. By then I was certain they weren't kids. Fumbling with my keys, I managed to open my front door and rush inside my home, completely out of breath. I was in good physical shape, but still the run there had completely exhausted me for some reason. Behind me, I could hear their tiny steps, and immediately after, a sharp knock on my door.
"Let us in, miss,"
the little girl screamed. She was no longer asking. She was demanding,
"You have to let us in."
I stepped away from the door immediately, shaking my head. I felt this strange, foreign impulse to open the door, to obey. But I grabbed my arm with my other hand and forced myself to move away.
"No. Leave before I call the police."
All I heard outside were giggles. Cruel, inhuman giggling.
"They can't help you out, miss. Just open the door."
They are still out there, knocking, demanding I let them in. The power has gone out and my phone battery is almost fully drained. I've tried calling my friends, but I can't get a signal. I've texted them, but none of them are answering. I'm just waiting for daylight to arrive. I hope they will be gone by then. The footsteps. She didn't expect to be out on the street this time at night. It had gotten late, and waiting for the bus to arrive during that witching hour would only make her hang out all alone in the dead of night for far longer than she wanted to. So Sasha had instead decided to walk. It was only 20 blocks or so anyways. What harm could it do? The streets were curiously deserted. Not that she was expecting too many folks to be strolling around at this time of night. But shouldn't she cross paths with at least the odd person every once and again? She was halfway there when she heard it. Footsteps, right behind her. Sasha turned around in surprise, as she hadn't heard anything but the quietness of night till that very moment. Yet no one was there. Sasha stopped and looked around for a few seconds, frowning as the sound was no longer noticeable. She considered maybe she was just imagining things, as she was slightly scared to begin with. So, not without some hesitation, she kept moving forward. A few seconds slipped by, but soon enough the sounds of footsteps moving just behind her returned. Once again, no one was there when she turned around. Now truly freaked out, Sasha began running forward toward her home, just 8 blocks away. But behind her, the footsteps began rushing as well. Looking back, no one was there, but she could feel it. Someone was running toward her, and her heart began beating so fast in her chest, she was certain it would explode any second then. though she feared someone would grab her before she reached her house, nothing happened. Nothing other than the sounds of someone moving right behind her. When she grabbed her keys and got ready to open the door, she was certain at least she'd be safe at last, in her own home, away from the darkness of the street. But just as she was about to place the keys in the lock, Sasha realized the noise no longer came from behind her. There was someone walking inside her apartment. Even though she could not actually see it, she could sense, without the hint of a doubt, that whoever, or rather, whatever had been following her home was now staring at her through the peeping hole. Her home was suddenly no longer the safe place she had hoped to reach. Point Pine's newest visitor came with a warning. Mary Lou Burningham took my sister Genevieve's tooth this morning. I saw her leaving the house when I got up to make breakfast. I only saw the back of her head as she walked out of our front door, but I would recognize those bright curls anywhere. This wasn't anything out of the ordinary, at least, not here in Point Pine. That's just what the collectors do. They collect stuff. No one really knows why or what they do with it, except for Mary Lou. We've seen her wearing jewelry made from the teeth of the people of Point Pine. She obviously doesn't wear all the teeth. That would be weird. And so I've always wondered what she did with the rest of them. Last year, when our hamster Pennies died, Curtis Mann came to take it from us. He collects dead animals. Those are the only two collectors that I'm familiar with. But there is 12 total and they all live at the Point Pine Oaks. Recently, the collectors have been behaving a little weirder than usual. Today, when I went on my run, I saw all of them walking in two single-file lines down the road. I had never seen all 12 of them together at the same time, so I stopped to observe. They were walking weirdly. They would put one foot forward, then stop for a second, then bring their other foot forward, then stop for a second. They walked like that all the way down the road, headed for the shops in the center of Point Pine. I saw them again about an hour later when I walked to the Point Pine bakery to pick up a pie for my mom. As I was waiting for them to bring my order out, Mary Lou walked up to me. "Hey, Lee," she said, sounding a bit sad. "Hey, are you all right?" Mary Lou sighed, and I glanced down at the chain she wore around her neck that contained a small glass bottle that was filled with teeth. Suddenly, that pie didn't sound so appetizing. "Why would I be all right?" she asked. I stared at her, not really knowing how to answer. "Haven't you heard about the visitor?" I shook my head slowly and then glanced over to see if anyone was on their way with my pie yet. No offense to Mary Lou, but she had a tendency of making people feel uncomfortable. Mary Lou sighed again and then reached out and placed her hand on my arm. She wore a ring with a tooth on it, on each one of her fingers. I tried not to gag. "Be cautious with your eyes, Lee. I would hate for you to lose them again," she said, staring at me intently with her huge green eyes. I watched as she walked away. The spot where her hand had rested on my arm felt noticeably colder than the rest of my body, and I rubbed my arm until the feeling went away. I finally got my pie and headed outside. I looked down the road and saw the collectors were back in their two lines, walking in that weird way that they had been earlier. I watched them for a few more seconds. Mary Lou turned around and we locked eyes. She brought both of her hands up to her face and covered her eyes before turning back around and continuing her walk. I turned around and started walking back home, thinking about how Mary Lou was quite possibly the most unsettling 11-year-old that I had ever met. On the walk home, I overheard a few different conversations about the collectors. The people of Point Pine were starting to become irritated with them, convinced that they were playing some sort of prank on everyone. When I got home, my mom was talking about them too. Can you believe it? They told Sandra's kid that he needed to keep an eye on his arms because he might lose them. I mean, who says that to an 8-year-old? Mary Lou told me to be cautious with my eyes, I said as I stepped in and set the pie down on the kitchen table. What? My dad snapped. I'm sure it's fine, they're just weird, I replied. They told Cody that the parade was coming back to get him soon, my mom said. Cody had come back to Point Pine a few months ago and had survived the Point Pine parade twice now. He had been staying with us for a while now, but spent most of his time locked in his room in the basement. She said something about a visitor. What? My dad asked. At the same time, my mom asked, who? Mary Lou. She asked me if I had heard about the visitor. What visitor? My mom asked. I don't know. She didn't give me a name. My parents spent the majority of the day questioning what Mary Lou and the rest of the collectors were talking about. And that evening we all got a flyer slipped under our front doors. I was sitting on the couch when it flew across the floor. I walked over and picked it up. It was a black piece of paper with the words, "Beware the Visitor," scrawled crudely at the top in white crayon. Below that, in neat writing, also in white crayon, it read the following. Residents of Point Pine, tomorrow at 7 a.m. we will have a visitor. We advise you not to interact with him, which shouldn't be a problem since no one is allowed up until 8:13 a.m. He will use this time to wander around town and even your homes. We advise you not to interact with him, which shouldn't be a problem since no one is allowed up until 8:13 a.m. He will use this time to wander around town and even your homes. If you hear him, simply pretend to be asleep. He is here to take from you. But as long as you don't interact, you will be fine. Be careful. The collectors. It didn't take long for people to freak out. Sure, we were all used to weird things happening in Point Pine, but how did the collectors know so much about this? Some people walked over to the Oaks and tried and speak with the collectors, but apparently Eric wasn't letting anyone in. Not that I blamed him. After being stuck in that weird time loop with him, I understood his caution when it came to the people that he allowed inside his building. Eventually, people returned to their homes and went to bed. There was an odd feeling like something really bad was going to happen. I tried my best to ignore it and went to bed at my usual time, tossing and turning for a few minutes before finally falling asleep. I awoke when I heard the front door creak open. I turned over in bed and looked at the clock. 7:55 a.m. My heart sped up in my chest as I realized that the visitor was here. I could hear the footsteps coming up the stairs and I turned so my back was facing my bedroom door and shut my eyes, trying to even my breathing. As the visitor got closer, I noticed that he was humming a very familiar tune. It took a few minutes before I realized that it was the same music that played whenever Point Pine Parade started. The visitor never stepped into my bedroom, but I heard him wandering around the rest of the house for what felt like hours. Finally, I heard him walk back out the door. I breathed a sigh of relief as I slowly turned back around to look at the clock. 8:08 a.m. 5 minutes until we could be up. I laid there staring at the ceiling and waiting for the town alarm to ring. Before it did, however, I heard a scream pierce through the morning silence. It sounded like it was coming from the house next door. I froze in bed, not wanting to take a look and risk seeing something that I shouldn't. Mary Lou's voice kept echoing in my mind as I laid there, waiting for the town's alarms to go off.
"Be cautious with your eyes, Lee. I would hate for you to lose them again."
Finally, the town alarms went off and I climbed out of bed and made my way downstairs, the rest of my family and Cody following me. I walked over to the living room window and pulled the curtains open a few inches to look outside. Most of the neighbors were now out there, crowding on the Humphreys' lawn. My dad opened the front door and Cody and I followed after him, making our way through the crowd of people to try and see what was going on. We pushed through until we got to the front of the crowd and finally managed to see what the big deal was. On the front lawn was the entire Humphreys family. All four of them, laying on their backs and facing up towards the sky, their eyes darting around the crowd of people above them. Their noses and mouths were completely gone. Everything below their eyes had vanished and was simply replaced with smooth skin. No nose, no nostrils, no lips. Just eyes and smooth skin all the way down their faces. Above their heads was a copy of the flyer I had gotten last night. Stuck in the grass by a rust butcher knife, only this flyer was a bit different. It was written on white paper in red font and it read, "Welcome the visitor," at the top. The rest of the flyer said as follows. "Residents of Point Pine, tomorrow at 7 a.m. we will have a visitor. You have been chosen to interact with him. Congratulations! He will use this time to wander around town and even your homes. When you hear him, get up and say hello. It is an honor to be chosen. He is here to see you and only you. Be happy, be nice, and don't put up a fight. It won't be worth it." The Visitor.
Hello, friends of darkness. It is I, Ryazine, and I am here today with Slender Man, written by Anonymous. Prepare yourself, sit back, watch, and listen. After waking up with a jolt, the girl laid in bed a few seconds longer. Reaching over to switch on her bedside lamp, she tried to remember exactly what had stolen her sweet slumber away. When she couldn't, the brunette swung her legs over to the side of the bed and heaved herself up. Checking the time on her phone, she snorted when she saw it was midnight, the witching hour. Knowing that sleep would only evade her, she left her bedroom for the kitchen, a good cup of coffee on her mind. As she passed by her front door, a chill spread like liquid fire down her spine. It's only winter, she told herself, focusing again on the coffee plan. Measuring out scoops, water, and preparing her cup kept her occupied. But as the dark liquid boiled, she had nothing left to keep her mind from wandering off. The chill returned and she couldn't help but glance behind her to the front door. It stood there innocently enough, just like always. The deadbolt was still in place and she could see nothing amiss with it. Turning back to her coffee, she did her best to forget about the feeling. With her cup in hand, she started back towards her bedroom. As she walked by the front door, she decided that a quick glance out of the peephole would help calm her restless mind. The chill worsened with each step she took towards the door and further away from the safety and warmth of her blankets. She pressed her empty hand against the cold, metal door and took a deep breath before leading her eye to the peephole. At first, she could only see an inky blackness and somehow seemed to swirl in itself. When she blinked in surprise, the void melted away. She wished it hadn't. In its place, there stood what she could only guess was once a man. The limbs were long and inhumanly awkward, with bulky joints branching off into several arms, not unlike the branches of a tree. The creature was draped in a black suit, somehow making the thing more nightmarish to her. The icing on the proverbial cake, however, was what passed as the hellish thing's face. It was as though her mind blurred the ghastly visage to spare itself further shock and horror. She shoved herself away from the door with the hand still pressed against it. The scalding mug of coffee fell, the liquid burning her bare legs as she fell backwards and tried to crawl away from the door. She knew, somehow, that her mind hadn't been playing tricks on her. As she crab-walked away from the door, she watched its tendrils as black as the void she first saw snake around the cracks. The girl was trapped between the instinct to flee and the gut feeling to not turn her back to the door. When the door jolted, the urge to flee overcame her and she slipped in the burning liquid as she tried to make it back to her room. She knew deep down that she was trapping herself in a corner, but she had to get away from the door. The girl was halfway down the hallway when she heard the previously locked door creak open. She screamed and slipped into a wall, cracking her chin on it and stunning her. After that, there was only blackness. "Nicole?" A warm, male voice snapped the woman out of her trance. As she turned around, she was met by one of her sister's doctors. She nodded, not sure if she should say anything, or even if she could find her voice if she did have something to say. That morning, she had gotten an urgent phone call from the hospital saying that her sister, Lindsay, was there. Before they had even let her see her, the doctors had pulled her off to one side and insisted that they talk to her about what might have happened. Phrases like self-inflicted and assault had been thrown around and Nicole felt her mind reel. She still hadn't fully understood what they had been saying until she saw Lindsay with her own eyes. Her little sister had a bandage wrapped around her head, covering both of her ears as well as her eyes. They said it was to keep her now deadened eyes from drying out and to try to keep infection out of the wounds Lindsay had made to her ears. The doctors had guessed that either she or someone else had jammed a pencil into them to keep her off balance or to deafen herself against something. There was the mix of first and second degree burns on her hands, legs, and feet, from what was assumed to be the coffee her neighbors found slipped all over the entry to her apartment. As Nicole walked into her sister's hospital room the first time, she thought she had spied the silhouette of a man in the window. That, she knew, was impossible. Her sister's room was on the third story of the hospital. I hope you enjoyed this short story. Please consider liking and subscribing to the channel. Thank you. Goodbye. My reflection stares at me when I'm not looking. This may sound paranoid and strange, but I have a problem. I can't go near a mirror or any reflective surface without a terrifying encounter with my own reflection. It all started about a week ago. I had just returned home from work and was ready to settle down with a drink in one hand
and my TV remote in another. I'm a bit of an introvert, so I don't go out much, and this is the perfect way I like to spend my evenings. My job, while not difficult in the least, is very taxing physically. I don't have anyone I would consider a friend, and my family all live out of state, so I get a lot of TV time in. After a couple of hours of binge-watching, I had ignored my bladder long enough and had to make a quick restroom run. Since the last episode ended in a great cliffhanger, I was in a hurry to get back. I will admit, I was a bit tipsy at this point, but I know what I saw next was not due to any intoxication I was feeling. As I was washing my hands in the sink, I looked up at the mirror and, for the quickest of moments, my reflection was grinning at me. It was very brief, and I turned back into my look of confusion I was giving the reflection. It was almost as if I busted someone, but that someone was my own image reflecting back at me. I shrugged this off as my imagination and continued my Netflix binge fest. It was becoming very late, and I decided to head to bed after this episode. I pounded down the last of my drink and hit the off button on the remote. What I saw in the blurry reflection of my now powered down television sends chills up my spine just even explaining it here. I saw myself, looking out from the TV and grinning, ear to ear. My reflection was filling the entirety of the screen, yet I was across the room. The smile that was directed at me was not benevolent. The sight of this hit me as I yelled out instinctively. "What the hell?" I yelped as I ran into the kitchen. I stood in the kitchen with my hands on my hips for several minutes, attempting to work up the courage to walk back into my living room and assess what I had just seen. After a good deal of pacing, I slowly walked back into the sight of my television and my reflection looking normal. I peered into the TV almost as if I was looking into a window, looking for some kind of clue. Nothing. My scared and perplexed reflection was all that looked back at me. I went to bed that night with a strange feeling, but I managed to get some sleep. I woke up the next morning in a bit of a haze from last night's round of drinks. I had the entire weekend off from work, but as I began to remember the strangeness from the night before, I decided I'd take a break from further inebriation this weekend. "Ugh, what is wrong with you?" I said to myself as I made my way to the kitchen to make some coffee. Even though I was alone, I felt a bit embarrassed about my previous night's antics. I continued my day with breakfast and more streaming. Several hours had passed and I had put last night's events out of my mind. This didn't last long, however. I had to make a trip to the store for a few essentials. A flash of anxiety fell over me as my thumb moved to the off button on my remote. With one eyebrow raised, I watched my TV flicker off. Nothing. My reflection was me, and there was no grinning or strange looks from my reflection. I sighed in relief as I stood up to make my way to the door. My relief ended quickly, though. As I moved to grab the doorknob on my front door, the reflection from it showed me something terrifying. My reflection in the doorknob was running towards me, as if to attack. My reflexes kicked in with a sudden sight, and I turned around quickly, falling to the floor. I slammed the back of my head against the door.
"Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa!"
I screamed uncontrollably. I took a quick glimpse around to an empty living room. I began to realize what happened last night may have been real after all. I got to my feet and quickly opened my front door with my eyes closed as to not see my reflection. I made my way to my car, still shaken from what had just occurred.
As I fumbled with my keys to unlock my car, a strange feeling wafted through me. I slowly looked up to my car window. The same evil grin of my reflection peered back at me. This time, it wasn't hiding it. It was almost as if the reflection was happy I had found it, and it knew how to frighten me. With eyes bulging, I slowly backed away. The grin from whomever or whatever this was did not stop. It continued to stare at me in delight. Who are you? What do you want from me? I asked as I struggled to get out the words. No response. No movement. It just continued to stare and grin. I panicked and quickly opened my car with this thing staring at me. I plopped in my front seat and closed my eyes. This isn't real, I yelled to myself. Whatever this is, it's just in my head. Don't think about it. Don't acknowledge it. I continued pleading with myself. I opened my eyes to see my reflection once again in my rearview mirror. It was shaking his head as if to say, "You're wrong. I'm here, and I have you." One panic swipe from my hand sent the mirror to the car floor. I began crying in fright. What was this? Am I losing my mind? Am I going insane? This felt like much more than a hallucination. I sat in my car for 20 more minutes, then decided to make my way to the store. I still needed to attempt to live my life. Whilst shopping, I deliberately avoided looking at any reflective surface. As a child, I was a bit socially inept, and having a breakdown in public would absolutely revive some of those memories of being teased and picked on. "How's your day going so far, sir?" the cashier asked me politely as he ran through my items. I looked up at him to answer. I shot back in a knee-jerk reaction, knocking over product behind me. In the reflection of the clerk's glasses, I saw it. It let out a silent laugh as it was seemingly amused by my reaction. I tried to ignore it. I'm not feeling too well today, I said, attempting to cover up my actions. Is there anything we can get you from the pharmacy? He asked, attempting to help. No. No, this is something that can't be helped, I timidly said with my eyes trained forward, attempting not to look in the clerk's eyes. Looking back, I regret this comment because the look he gave me was a reminder of the strange child I used to be. I made my way back home with my newly purchased goods. Again, I avoided anything that could house that evil thing that was seemingly amused at what it was doing to me. I sat on my sofa as soon as my groceries were put away and stared into the blank television set. It was normal. My own reflection was looking back at me. No evil grin, no attempts to scare me. What do you want? I sternly said to my powered down television. I was slowly coming out of my fright and entered a more frustrated mood. Is this amusing you, huh? To frighten me? Show yourself, I commanded my reflection. Nothing. I was watching myself in the reflection of my TV scold whatever this thing was. I threw my remote on the floor in frustration and stood up. I paced for several minutes in anger. I was fed up. This thing knew how to manipulate me and it was getting a kick out of it. Why me? I asked myself under my breath. Why does it want me? I walked into my bathroom to confront this being in the first place I saw it. There I was, staring at my own reflection in a combination of anger and fright. I won't let you scare me anymore, I instructed my reflection. Nothing again. You have no power over me. You can't hurt me. All you can do is startle me, that's it, I demanded to the mirror.
Nothing still. I stared at myself in the mirror. My reflection still had my movements. It was reacting in sync with everything I did. Perhaps this thing had gone away. It had its fun, and I was now useless to it. It got the fright out of me that it needed. I wish this were true. As my stare continued, my reflection changed slowly. When I say changed, I mean its form began to dissipate. It was turning into an almost silky-looking black mass. It was hovering in the mirror. No form besides the black, twisted mass that was in front of me. I stared in disbelief. From the middle of the dark mass, something started to form. As it grew, I recognized it quickly. It was the grinning teeth I'd seen in my terrifying reflections before, except this wasn't my grin. Its smile was wider than any human could attempt, and more menacing. Slowly, two eyes began to appear above the toothy grin. The eyes, those eyes, were pure evil. I fell to the floor in terror. "Go away. I hate you. Go away. Get out of here," I screamed in a terrified, high-pitched voice. It began to laugh at me. I could not hear it, but it was laughing hysterically at me. I've dealt with being laughed at my whole life, but nothing could have prepared me for this. I closed my eyes tight as it continued its laughter. I put my hands over my eyes in terror and began sobbing once again. Several minutes had passed and I looked up timidly. It was gone. All I could see was the bare wall of the bathroom and the reflection. I slowly stood up, revealing myself in the mirror. In a defeated walk, I left the bathroom and made my way to my bedroom. I lay down and stayed in bed for the rest of the day. Since this day, I continued to see this thing in my reflections. Out of the corner of my eye, it will run at me, startle me. It tries to claw at me and laughs when I jump back. I can feel it staring at me with that grin, that evil grin. As I'm writing this, it's staring at me. It's waiting for its next opportunity to frighten me, to torture me. It stares from the reflections in my phone, my computer screen, door handles, water, anywhere I have a reflection. It lives. It sometimes doesn't want to startle me. It just stares and stares as if it's obsessed with me and feeds off of my fear of it. If this happens to you, know that you're not alone. My reflection stares at me too. It's always there and it wants you to know it. Try watching your reflection from the corner of your eye. Does it do anything beyond your own actions? If it does, you have my pity, as I now have yours. If you folks enjoyed this story, please consider subscribing to the channel. I appreciate it. Special thanks to Deify on Reddit for writing this story.
Hi folks, I'm Ryazine, and I hope you enjoyed today's first podcast out of many to come. If you want to continue supporting me, go ahead and head over to my YouTube channel, Ryazine, R-Y-I-Z-I-N-E. Subscribe to me there and keep track for more. Keep listening, folks, to Late Night Radio.